Hello and welcome to Back in My Play. This is a side episode or Back in My Play guide in for this week. We are going to be returning to the regularly scheduled episodes next week when we're going to be hitting on three great Neo Geo games, including Metal Slug, Neo Turf Masters, and Baseball Stars 2. But for this week, I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is, as always, Trey Gibson, who is living in the world of Disney on the Wii U, nonetheless. What's up?
Yeah, not much. Wii U, Disney Infinity is good stuff. What's not good stuff is my Vita. I'm currently having a mini panic attack, but other than that, I'm great.
Don't say the Vita's dead. It's not. It's well and alive this week, but we'll talk about that in the news.
No, I'm just talking about mine personally.
I know, it's just...
It's alive and well, and, you know, or the Vita itself is alive and well, but mine, apparently it couldn't handle all the news.
Just exploded, just popped.
Information overload.
Popped an OLED. And also, as always, we have Josh Hillier, who is... at his like neighbor's house using the internet because the Comcast guy is digging up holes in his backyard.
Yeah, the Comcast guy is digging my metaphorical grave right now. Well, it's both metaphorical and literal in this case, in which I will lie and use internet at some point in time. But for now, it's like the late 90s, and I'm bumming off the internet from my friend.
Cool. Use that awesome Net Zero account.
I have some AOL CDs you should borrow.
Free internet. So, Net Zero, I love the crap out of that thing. No, actually, just use SegaNet. All right? Just sign up. Use your SegaNet account. You get a free Dreamcast keyboard with it. And it's a really good deal, and it's actually what I used for quite a long time because I got locked into a 2-year contract. We have a little bit of a different show for you guys this week. Like I said, it's Back in My Play Guide In, where we're going to be following up and finishing the discussion on retro gaming setups and the Japanese gaming experience. I just returned from Japan. I am super jet lagged again, as kind of I was last time, not able to really think correctly, but we'll do my best. I came back with a treasure trove of video games, 4 PlayStation Vitas, a GameCube, and many other things, including awesome keychain things that have Nintendo sounds like this. And, of course, the coin sound that you can't live without. So,
that's cool. You going to press the coin sound every time Trey and I make a good point?
No, I was just going to, like, go up to the microphone and do this. So that's cool.
Whoa, it's like all of them.
Yeah, all of them at once because it's, like, the dubstep remix of Super Mario Brothers. The way that we're going to start this off is kind of finishing off that Japanese discussion and the retro gaming stuff, and then we're going to be going into the news. There's lots of huge stuff, huge announcements this week at Gamescom, so we're going to hit on that briefly and the retro ramifications of all that. So to finish off of what we started talking about with Josh last week, I wanted to answer some questions that the audience kind of brought up and talk a little bit more about the trip. Mainly, again, kind of starting off with the Framemeister. We got some more questions about that. And now that I'm home, the first thing I literally did, of course, was unpack just my games. My clothes are still sitting in the bag. And hooked up the Framemeister to my 55-inch LG and started playing around with it. And it, like, I was with a hooking up to a 40-inch Sony LCD out in Japan, and the thing is awesome. I even shot a video that I'm going to post up on the website tomorrow where you can see the comparison between just going straight composite versus going through composite through the Framemeister and also S-Video through the Framemeister with some Super Nintendo games, Zelda Link to the Past and Castlevania. Super Castlevania 4 were the two games that I used for comparison's sake. And I think you will see that it is a crazy difference between the two, so much so that I put my 32-inch Sony Vega up on Craigslist for free, and I can't wait for someone to come pick that up. The extra room is just glorious. So,
what are you going to do with all that space, Kevin? I know that's a little off track, off topic, but I'm just curious.
Well, I kind of needed it because I bought a ton more games, and I have a huge lot of 100 Super Famicom games that should be coming in the mail in the next week or two. Mm-hmm. So I kind of need that room for shelving. I'm not planning on keeping all that stuff, but it's actually good to have a little bit more room. And the also other great related thing of note is that I got my monitor chassis. I got a replacement monitor chassis for my Neo Geo machine. So that thing is up and running and playing a bunch of the Neo Geo carts. I bought 12 MVS Neo Geo games while out in Japan, and it was probably the biggest spending thing that I did out there. Is I spent about $400 on Neo Geo stuff, but to be honest, it was a fantastic deal compared to what they go for on eBay or NeoGeo.com. So I am excited, including Baseball Stars 2, got Metal Slug 3 and X, even King of Fighters 98, some weird stuff like World Heroes 2 Jet, which is a super weird fighting game, and Cyberlip is another weird one. Bunch of cool games, and they're relatively cheap out there, and I'm very excited to play some more of that stuff.
You're kind of already hitting on a topic that I was hoping we'd get to in just a few minutes, which is and we kind of talked a little bit about it last time, but we definitely are going to talk more about it today. And I know we're going to get to the Framemeister stuff as well, considering that's your middle name, thanks to the 8-4 Play guys, which was very funny. Anyway, though, you're talking a little bit about why buying Japanese games is such an awesome thing, that you were getting these Neo Geo games, you know, like way less than it would have cost to buy them off of eBay in America.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is that when we hit on this a little bit last time, but because there is such a huge market for this stuff over there, there are no specialty shops. There are game shops all over the place. I stayed in a place called Koshigaya, which is a relatively small town, and there were three retro game shops within, I would say, a half a mile of each other. One that had basically piles and piles and piles, and I found this after we did that first podcast, but it had just piles of 100 yen Super Famicom, Mega Drive, Game Boy, Famicom, N64 games, like just bins and bins and bins of them that you could just kind of pick through. And it was like a super shady shop. Like, it was very dark. All the games that were a little bit more expensive were all behind the counter, but you could spend like hours going through these bins of $1 games and find some really, like, I found some great Game Boy games. I found a couple of copies of Tetris Battle Gaiden, found a copy of Super Mario World for 100 yen that was, you know, in good shape. So there was, that's the interesting thing, is that there's so many shops out there that there is competition. There's not just like, we've all talked, you know, Trey, Josh, and myself, about retro shops that are near us. They're never like really good prices. They, if we're lucky, they're comparative to like eBay markup, and that is kind of what we have to deal with. Out in Japan, you really can get kind of lucky with finding shops like that. Or even before the interview or the episode with the A4 guys, I was walking around in Shibuya and went to the local book off, and all their retro stuff was 40% off. That means all their, and I will keep in mind, like, the crappy thing is that the Mega Drive never really hit it big out there, so it's really hard to find that stuff. Like, you can find Nintendo games like piles and piles and rows of them all over the place. It's hard to find Sega stuff and TurboGrafx stuff. I would even say, like, PC Engine TurboGrafx stuff has more shelf space than Mega Drive stuff. It's that, like, that crazy when you go to these stores. But I was, I spent, in all, I looked at my finances, I spent about $1,600, and that included three PlayStation Vitas. And I went home with over 100 games. And four consoles, one that I left in Japan for my friend. And I, you know, like, this is a messed up thing. I go into a random store, a soft map, like, that's in kind of on the fourth floor, really hard to find in Akihabara. And I find two things. One, a $9 orange GameCube that is in perfect shape. It looked like it just came out of the box, works perfectly, comes with a controller. And also, they had a Sega Dreamcast, same thing, $9, like in perfect shape. Like, I was so bummed because I literally got back to, after the interview with the A4 guys, I got back to the apartment that I was staying at, started packing things up to kind of see where I was in terms of space. I was out of room. I couldn't buy any more stuff. I wanted to get a Sega Saturn. I wanted to get a Twin Famicom. And I was out of room. I would have had to leave clothes behind or spend an extra $100 to bring a box onto the plane, which I didn't really feel like doing. So it was a relatively successful trip.
I had forgotten about those orange GameCubes. Weren't those like limited edition even?
I don't know, Trey, do you know about the GameCube stuff? Were there orange ones that came out here?
Oh my God. I'm embarrassed to admit that I never knew that there was even an orange GameCube, period.
Well, it might have been a Japan thing.
I knew there was a controller because I had a controller.
I had the orange controller too.
Yeah, yeah. I had the black GameCube. You know, of course, it came with that controller, and then I got the orange controller as well. But I had no idea there was an orange GameCube. Now that I know, I want one.
Well, like I said in the previous part of this segment, that if you do, like, if you want to justify the trip, you can probably make your money back. Like, I've already flipped two PlayStation Vitas on eBay for an $80 profit, because when I went out there, I wanted to pick up a PlayStation Vita. It was because I sold my black one that I had a couple months ago, thinking, hell, I'm going to just sell it. I'm pretty, you know, happy with what I got right now with the 3DS. I'm just going to sell it. And when I go out to Japan, I can get one of those awesome red or blue ones because I thought they looked really cool. So I got out to Japan, and like day after day, we'd walk into a shop and be like, man, I'm going to get a PlayStation Vita. Then I wouldn't walk out with one. And then my friend, Robert, and his girlfriend were in a Yodobashi camera. And he's like, Kev, I want to go look at cameras. You know, Natsumi is going to go upstairs. She's going to get a memory card for her brother or something like that. So we're looking at cameras for like 30 minutes. And then she comes downstairs and like, all right, we're going to go. And then we walk out the store and like she pulls a brand new blue PlayStation Vita out of the bag. And they were like, this is, you know, from us, you know, welcome to Japan. Whoa. Now you have a PlayStation Vita. So yeah, they kind of floored me. I'm like, no, go return it. I'm not accepting this. Go return it. And I like walked away because it wasn't like, I'm like, I'm already staying at your apartment for free. And now you're buying a PlayStation Vita. So they were super cool. And so I got a blue PlayStation Vita and then picked up a 32 gig memory card for like $75. And then, of course, when I went to pick up that memory card, I'm like, shit, those red ones look super dope. I'm just going to buy a red one too, because, hey, it's like I got two Vitas for the price of one, right? So
exactly.
So I bought a red one, and then I'm waiting at the airport, and they have duty-free shops like we do in the U.S., but, of course, they have electronic stores that are selling PlayStation Vitas, 3DSs, Nintendo games, stuff like that. And PlayStation Vitas at the duty-free shop are like $185. So I bought one more of each, and with a thinking, hey, I'll just flip them on eBay, and I got like I got $280 for each of them. So after fees, I probably, you know, made out with like a $70 profit on them. So it kind of like paid off that second Vita. And man, the blue and red Vita, like, no joke, I kind of like to have black everything. Like, I was super pumped when the black 3DS got announced, but the blue Vita and the red Vita are just the most beautiful pieces of hardware I've ever seen. They're just gorgeous.
Well, and you know, Sony's a great hardware company anyway. And so when they're going to do something, well, actually, we'll talk about this later in news. But generally, when they do things in colors like blue and red, they're not going to look like Fisher-Price products.
Oh, dude, like comparing it to, like comparing the Red Vita to my 3DS, I'm like, shit, the 3DS is just such a dumb looking piece of hardware. Like it's like cheap plastic, like the plastic in the back pulls off. And I mean, the really the main thing that there's two real detriments to the Vita. One is the OLED screen, which is beautiful, but the pixels are going to get, like, the screen's going to get messed up in a year or two. It's going to start yellowing and the pixels are going to die and stuff like that. Which is
wait, what are you talking about?
So there's a defect in the OLED technology where it's a huge thing on cell phones because you're only going to have your cell phone for about 2 years. So you're not going to notice it. But in like 3 years, you're going to notice your PlayStation Vita screen is not going to look so hot. People have already noticed it after a year of use. Of course, these are people that use their PlayStation Vita a lot. They're like the hardcore people on NeoGAF that are using their Vitas a lot. And that is what kind of like made it so... I was like, yeah, I've had this Vita for 6 months. I'm going to sell it and just get a new one. And hopefully down the road, they're going to release Vitas with either better OLED screens or they're going to go with some kind of LED technology to make sure that this doesn't happen. So, or LCD so technology.
That's with OLED as like a technology as a whole. Correct. So like if someone dropped $8,000 on an OLED TV, they can expect it to last 3 years?
Well, it depends. I think the backlit OLEDs are different, but each individual pixel of the PlayStation Vita is backlit. So if you look up, if you guys want to go and look up OLED Vita, like Vita, like you type it into Google, OLED Vita, the second thing that pops up is black spots because there's basically going to be like dead pixels and stuff like that. So
yeah, I noticed black spots on my Vita already. Like if you hold it like a certain angle and like
during an all black screen, that's basically when the pixels aren't being powered to show black. Like that will pop up, but this is even like when you're like having a white scene, you might have white, black pixels like locked in.
Wow.
Like kind of like a plasma. And, I mean, you can look like if you look for, pictures online, you'll see some people that are having problems with it, but you can keep in mind, you can always send it out to Sony within a year. You can get the screen replaced. You can even pay to get the screen replaced if you want to do it. And, they will have a revision at some point that will fix this, but,
right.
It's really not that big of a deal. I'm just like we've talked about on the show. I'm someone that likes everything to look perfect. That's why I have like a 32-inch CRT up until this point. So that might just be me, but yeah, man, I'm super happy. Like I'm almost kind of bummed that I sold those other two Vitas. I kind of wanted to have two just on backup, just in case. But
there you go. In case yours tries to do what mine just did.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's suicide.
So yeah. The other thing that I wanted to talk about in Japan is the arcade scene, not only in the game centers, which is it's really sad. The 50 yen arcade in Shibuya closed down on Sunday, and I was literally just there on Wednesday when we recorded the podcast, and I didn't know it was shutting down when I was there. But it was a little weird because it was like pretty packed, and it wasn't usually that busy when I went there, and I just figured it was just time of the day or something like that, but I guess people were just getting in their last games before the place shut down, and it's really sad. But like I said, I bought a bunch of arcade stuff over there, and MVS carts are really cheap, and the cool thing when you buy them out there, they always are complete. Like they will give you I will back up a little bit. At the G Front, I'm really pissed off because they actually just give you reprinted like mini marquees and instruction cards. They're not the real ones. And that sucks big time because they are just like printed on paper, like glossy paper, and they don't really look good and they're super cheap and flimsy. I didn't realize that because I didn't open up the packages when I like got them. I kept them sealed until I got home. And that's a huge bummer. But the guys at – this is the secret. Go to Mac Japan, M-A-K. Look for them on the main strip of Akihabara. They're going to be on the right side if you head away from the train station. And not only are the staff there super helpful and super nice, way better than the people at G-Front, by the way, but their quality of their games are it's amazing. They test everything before they sell it to you. If you go buy a board there, they're going to hook it up and test it before they let you buy it, which is huge. Like, that is like not something like you would really expect in terms of customer service. The other thing is all the Neo Geo carts come with beautiful individually wrapped mini marquees that are, even if they're reprints, they look so close to the real thing that I wasn't even able to notice. And they pack everything in bubble wrap when you buy it, opposed to where you go to the G Front, they're just like wrapped in plastic. So that is my recommendation. If you want to buy like any kind of arcade boards, and they had a ton of arcade boards, like CPS2 stuff, CPS1, even Atomos Wave. Like, seriously, give them your business. And I will say the same thing about Friends, which is next to the G Front. If you're going to buy retro game carts, and the old woman and husband there, give them your business because they clean everything. Everything is way better priced than if you go to, like, Super Potato is way overpriced. You're paying for really selection. But if you can find it at Friends, go there, because again, the people are super nice. Like, they went out of their way to treat me like, well, like a customer. And that's not always the case when you're dealing with being an American in Japan, because sometimes they really don't like Americans buying their games and bringing them out of the country. So that's
interesting, being sort of territorial over your games and somebody just coming there to take them and bring them out of the country.
Well, it's not a overarching thing, but there is some xenophobia, or is that the right word, of like they really don't like outsiders. That's why there is that whole like notion of guy like gaijin and stuff like that. It's not something I really noticed this whole trip that I was out there, because even I was staying outside of Tokyo too, like an hour and a half outside of Tokyo. So I didn't notice that at all. Every interaction that I had with pretty much everyone out there was great, except the people at G Front were kind of like, didn't want to be there or something like that. So I, you know, have nothing negative to say about the Japanese people. I will say when you're going out there and it's 100 degrees and humid, in close quarters in stores in Akihabara can get a little smelly, which is, you know, bad that is kind of leading to the stigma of nerds, but or whatever you want to call it, like gamers out there. But anyways, I think that's pretty much it in terms of the Japanese stuff that I wanted to cover. I will say again, just a recap, if you're going to go out there, make sure you buy, pick up some Saturn stuff and PC Engine stuff. It's really cheap. If you want to pick up like a Sega Saturn, you're going to be looking at under $50 for a beautiful, clean, white Sega Saturn. And also with Famicom disk systems are going to run you about $120, but well worth it. That's probably the biggest thing I'm super bummed out about, not coming home with one, because I don't have a Famicom right now. All I have is the Super Famicom, and I even bought some discs, so that sucks. I was not able to find a Game Boy Pocket Light, but if you can find one out there, it's like a backlit Game Boy Pocket, kind of like Indiglo, like an Indiglo watch kind of backlit.
I thought that was just light, like in terms of weight. I didn't realize that it was actually backlit. That is really rad.
No, they're super cool, and they're not even that rare. Like, you can find them, and I've seen them before, and I kick myself for not picking them up in the past. But I did pick up a Game Boy Pocket for like $9 that was in perfect shape. So,
yeah, that one looked really good. I saw it, silver one.
Yeah, didn't go home empty-handed, and also, make sure you keep a lookout for some of those games that either came out here in limited quantities, like Dracula Double X on the Super Famicom, where you can get like basically Rondo of Blood for way cheaper on Super Famicom, like a sixth of the price of buying the Super Nintendo version. And also games like Yoshi's Island, which you can pick up easily for $4, $5. Super Back to the Future 2, which wasn't released out here, but if you're a fan of Back to the Future, that is a must-have game. Games like Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy series, Secret of Mana, any RPG, if you know it well enough where you don't really need the dialogue, you can pick those games up for like $5 in perfect shape. And also, keep a lookout in the junk bin, because again, the quality of the carts for the Japanese people is super important. We might not be so that might not be so important for us. So if, as long as it works, like, I'm usually pretty happy, and it's not like the label's not destroyed. You can find tons of great games for $1 or $2, including like brand new sealed copies of Night Trap for the Sega CD. And yeah, I think that's really about it. I will be more than happy to answer any of these questions directly in the thread on NeoGAF on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinLarrabee, or you can email through the contact page. If you have any questions or need help on retro game shopping in Japan, let me know. I'll be happy to answer them. And unless you guys have anything to hit on with that, I think we'll take a break and then get into the news.
I'm feeling good. That was a lot of info, but I actually got like a visual idea of what you were talking about. You were talking about specific directions of where to walk. So, yeah, now I just need to go to Japan, and I feel like I'm all set.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
No, go ahead, Trey.
I was going to say Japan's on my bucket list of places to go before I die, so I took notes.
I'm serious, guys. Like, it is.
Me too. Dead serious.
Yeah, you will feel at home there, because in Japan, video games are everywhere. They're in the convenience stores. They're in literally every department store. There are video game sections. There's people throughout all age ranges, genders, and all types playing either, like, the amount of people I see playing still PSPs out there, playing DSs, 3DSs, an incredible amount of Vitas. Like, and there was like a Vita tournament going on at outside one of the Yodobashi Cameras. They had a awesome Soul Sacrifice tournament, and PlayStation Fantasy Star Online 2 tournaments going on where they're giving away free stuff. It is just like, if you are a real, like, a hardcore gamer, and if you're listening to this, like, go out there. I promise you, you will just come home feeling like you were in paradise for a week. It is really going into a different world where this is more of an accepted thing. And it's not like even here in America, like, it's now starting to be cool to, like, play video games, where like 3 years ago, you're like, wow, you play video games? Why do you waste your time doing that?
Yeah, that mentality is so sad. So it would be nice to go somewhere where that isn't so prevalent. Did you street pass a lot?
Oh, so many. Like, I got over 120 street passes, and I would have gotten more just because, like, it caps off at 10, and I wasn't, like, stopping. Like, literally, you would walk, if you got on a train and then got off a train, you would have 10 people. Just because there's so many people out there walking through a station. And I didn't even go through, like, Shinjuku Station or anything like that. I didn't go to Shinjuku. I didn't go to, like, downtown Tokyo. The closest I got to Tokyo was, I mean, it basically is, but Akihabara was the closest I got. So, and Shibuya, too. Shibuya was obviously the most populated or overly saturated place in the whole country to go to. So,
but, you know, like, foreign Americans who imagine having the problem of clearing those out at anything other than a video game conference, that is just, you know, like, having to stop so you can get 10 more right away. Like, just that being the daily routine in Japan, that's just so cool to me, because I love the street pass feature. I just started working at a big university again, and I'm getting street passes now for, like, the first time in forever. Yeah, because there's a ton of students, and they have an area, actually, for the video game community on campus. So I make sure to walk past there on my way in and my way out, and so every day I'm getting 3 or 4, and I'm really happy with that. Like, that's been the biggest I've ever had.
Trey, are you a big spot passer or street passer? Does it do anything for you?
When, I mean, like, I like some of I like it. My problem is I forget to take my 3DS with me a lot.
For sure, yeah.
So, you know, well, it's just, you know, I just forget to bring it. But I mean, you know, if I brought it with me more places, like, I mean, I should honestly just bring my 3DS with me to work, because Best Buy, so many people come in there to bring their, like, 3DSs. Oh, totally. I get a shitload just from that. So, I mean, it's just a matter of me forgetting to bring it with me.
Well, they're kind of, you know, we're all rocking XLs here back in my place. So, you know, they're a little bit heavy to carry around. And if you're wearing, like, some really tight, form-fitting jeans, you know, trying to get a date or something, then that can be a problem if you have an XL kind of cramping your style.
Hey, is that a XL in your pants? Something like that? All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back with the news, some awesome impressions on DuckTales and also Disney Infinity, talking about Gamescom and really like a huge news segment. So stick around. We'll be right back. I knew that would come in handy. Worth the $2.
Jet Set Radio. Radio. You're feeling real tipsy. Now let me take you on a trip and roll with me. With the brothers, get their party on every day, because we got to do that anyway. Hey, it's time to get on down to the funky, funky rhythm and the sound, because I gotta hit you up, big baby, and stop that woo like gravy. Yeah, put the stuff in your trunk every day. Let them big muscles know that we don't play. Hey, it's the fun coming through, hitting you every single day of the week. Yo, come on.
Okay, we're here for a gigantic news segment where we're going to be hitting on a ton of stuff. First off, as we alluded to earlier in the show, I was super lucky to hang out with the guys at 8-4 and be a guest on the 8-4 Play podcast, where we, I guess they kind of termed it as Kevin's Retro Game Corner, where we talked about stuff like the Framemeister, which we talked about in this episode and the past episode, and also really kind of retro gaming in general. And it was really cool to kind of see them talk about it, because they've been in the industry for so long, and they were like teenagers when the Super Nintendo came out and stuff like that. So they have a little bit different history than we do. And I will be, I'm kind of really super pumped. We're trying to work out a kind of like mix up episode where we do that Zelda 2 episode. We're going to try to hopefully get that going. But in the meantime, if you haven't listened to their podcast, you can check them out at 8-4.jp or something like that. I'm great with URLs. Just search.
I think that's it, actually. I've been there a few times. I believe that's the URL.
Okay, yeah, 8-4.jp. You can get their podcast on there. It's obviously on iTunes. And in case those guys are listening, it was great to be on, and a honor, and to be honest, just a lot of fun. Like, I was so jacked up during that episode, and I got to bring them some really shitty games to leave in their office, and some killer cuts. So,
well, dude, the killer cuts. I mean, if they don't appreciate you for that, then I mean, they have it all wrong, obviously. Abbey Road. There's a few really great albums, but Killer Cuts is up there.
That was probably some of the best feedback that I got from that podcast, or that episode, is that people were just saying, like, that was the funniest part, was just the crap that I brought over, which was perfect. It was the whole point. So listen to that. Also, we are getting close to like our 10th episode, and I would love, if you are out there and are a graphic designer of some sort and would like to help create a new logo for the podcast, I would be forever in your debt. And maybe we can work something out in terms of like me promoting your work or something like that. Not only in this podcast, but also I get a pretty good following on Twitter and on my fitness podcast, The Fitcast, that has like 20,000 listeners every week. So maybe we can work something out in terms of a swap for that, but we could probably use a better logo. People were mentioning that.
we do appreciate the logo we have right now, though. It was
yeah, no,
it was very nice of your pal.
Very soon it will be nostalgic, if I may say.
It totally will. Yeah, it will be. Yeah, it'll be a retro logo.
Maybe. Do you remember what your life was like when you first saw that logo? That's what we'll be asking.
Yeah, what was going on then?
Man, I used to go to the rental store and look at that logo.
Dude, it was great. It was a good box art. Also,
music was good.
We will let's talk. We talked a little bit of PlayStation Vita before, but I wanted to quickly talk about my reintroduction to the PlayStation Vita after like 5 months off. I think I sold my Vita in March. Actually, it was in March because I restored my Vita from my laptop back onto the new one. And man, that is an awesome piece of hardware, like we talked about before. Not to like talk up too much about it. And I swear, like the 3DS just has the games. Like the 3DS hardware is just a joke, like in terms of what it offers and the like the eShop or the Virtual Console. It's just. It's also the best way to describe it is like it's just a joke compared to what PSN offers and the PS1 library, the PSP library.
You gotta wonder what Nintendo's thinking. Like, they can't honestly think that anything about the eShop is good other than the content, and not even the content in the sense of like you said, the Vita's got PS1 games. Virtual Console is a joke. I mean, they do have digital downloads now, but there's no account system. So yeah. I mean, it's an absolute joke.
Well, think about like comparing a, you know, I guess like the most expensive Virtual Console stuff on there are the 3D remakes. But since they don't have Super Nintendo stuff or N64 stuff, I mean, come on that thing.
And they could.
They totally could. They're just like they're, you know, thumbs up butts or something like that. So the on PSN, you can get a like multi-disc, like 40 hour long RPG, let's just say like Vagrant Story, for $6, like regular price, and yep. For $5.99. Or you can get, like, I just looking at my Vita, I have so many PS1 games. Like, we talked, we're going to be doing a Resident Evil episode soon, and to be able to play that on the Vita is just it's just really great because it looks so good, and it again is $6 to get a classic like Resident Evil 1 or Resident Evil 2, or even, I mean, we talked about doing so many PS1 games on the show, like Tomba and maybe even like Twisted Metal. There's the incredible library of RPGs on that thing. Not only...
Well, go ahead. I mean, and it's so extensive that you don't even... It's one of the few cases in which you can let the digital library that Sony offers replace having to physically collect that stuff, which is good because, as we've discussed on the show a fair amount,
disc rot.
CDs can have disc rot, exactly. So it's a nice way around that, and it's very affordable. Well, so, I mean, this is one of the cases in which I don't feel bad about emulation.
And it's
the best.
I
was going to say the best thing about it, if something happens to your Vita, you have to get another one. It's still waiting there for you.
Exactly what I was going to say, man, because you talk about the account system. I've spent like $400 on PSN buying PSP games, PS1 games, and Vita games, and I've probably spent $30 all time across the Wii and the 3DS on virtual console stuff because everything is tied to your friggin' system, and it's what's one of those things that's keeping me from getting a Wii U. Because I know, man, I'm going to run into the same goddamn problem on there too. But I can buy stuff on my, I can buy stuff online and then download it to my Vita. I can buy it on the PS3. You can do great things. Like, I mean, I don't even think we just saw the first bit of it today, but being able to do the streaming from your PS4 to PS Vita is kind of awesome. Like, it is, yeah. Literally, it's the Wii U gamepad.
I hope it works as well as, you know, they showed today, but because they had said some stuff with PS3 and PS Vita, and
exactly,
never really,
yeah,
never really kind of came true. But you know, I'm the way they're talking about it, I mean, they're really, really promoting the hell out of it, so it seems to be good. But yeah, I mean, you know, like you were saying with the account system, I can look and see stuff that I bought for my PS3 back in 2006.
Yeah.
Like, and here we've had two generations of Nintendo consoles, three if you count the 3DS as well, and there's no account system. If my Wii U crashed right now, all those virtual console games that I did that transfer for would be gone. just gone.
That's super scary, and, man. Like, no
and
joke.
And that's a lot of money. Yeah. I invested a lot of money in that blindly because I'm such a big Nintendo fan. But, you know, now looking back on it in retrospect, now that it's 2013, I'm starting to, you know, kind of realize, no, this isn't going to happen anymore. So the games I want, I'm buying on older systems.
I think Trey's internet's getting kill zoned right now.
Is it?
A little bit.
It's getting knived in the throat.
And it was really cool to be able to play this stuff back on the plane, like on in the airport on the fly. I was starting because my buddy didn't have great internet, so while I was at the airport, I started downloading like tons of stuff, and including, you know, some PS1 games. And again, in terms of the retro possibilities of this console is so nuts because of all the remakes that they had that went on the PSP and also the PS1, the remakes that we're getting, like Jet Set Radio and things of the like. And there is even rumors of like stuff like, maybe not a great game, but Duke Nukem 3D coming to the PlayStation Vita. Having that kind of great content and that library on there for guys like us that just like to, you know, play old stuff. There's so many PS1 games I missed out on because I got there so late because I had an N64 that I can kind of go back and check out and really like see what they're all about. Being able to play like Resident Evil 2 looks so goddamn good on the PlayStation Vita. It almost like makes me not even like want to boot up the Dreamcast version, which is also super nice. But
how about that N64 version, huh?
Yeah, I bought the N64 version for the Japanese N64.
Oh, cool. I've never actually played the N64 version of it. I understand that the dialogue is, you know, pretty much not there, or at least the audio recordings.
But it's in I think it's 480i is like, it was one of the first games, and that was the big deal. It was like high res textures for all the stuff in the N64 game. My N64 doesn't have one of the 4 meg expansion cart, so I got to get one of those, and then
those
I will
are pretty
be able
cheap,
play.
Right?
Yeah, I just was kind of lazy, and one thing I'm going to warn people, just going back to last segment, is I thought that you could play U.S. games on a Japanese N64. It's the other way around. You can play Japanese N64 games on a U.S. N64 and not have problems with the like pegs that are inside the system that kind of stop you from pushing the game down. So heads up on that. I apologize if I might have said that last episode. I'm not sure, but after trying to put a U.S. copy of Extreme G into my Japanese N64, no go. So that's that. And also, again, you know, just not to harp on the Vita, but I've just been kind of really like enjoying the experience again, like playing on literally seconds before I got on the flight, literally while they were boarding, I was still downloading Hotline Miami, and I owned it on Steam, but I never really touched it. And then I played it for like 2 hours straight on the plane, freaking out the poor 6-year-old Japanese boy next to me and his mom, because of how that game is super violent. And he was like watching me, like he was playing, he wasn't playing Pokemon, but he was playing some Pokemon-like game on the 3DS, and he kept like looking over at my system, and I could see his mom was watching me play that game where I was just like slitting dudes' throats. And even though it's almost like 8-bit, 12-bit graphics, it is still incredibly violent, or like taking a baseball bat to a dog, not the thing that you want a child to see.
That is the one time I feel uncomfortable when I'm there are several times I feel uncomfortable, but I always feel bad about killing the dogs when I'm playing Hotline Miami.
Oh, I don't like killing dogs whatsoever in video games, ever.
Right, like even Resident Evil.
Like you'd hear that, you know, horrible dog cry at the once you put a bullet in between their eyes, but
yeah.
You know,
scared little boy.
Wolfenstein 3D, man, it's where it all started. I was killing dogs ever since I was 7 years old. So anyways, seriously, no joke, though. I'm a huge dog lover, and I probably the sad thing is
a dog killer.
No. The sad thing is I probably donate. There's a local shelter here, like a no kill shelter in Massachusetts, and I probably donate like more than I probably should to that place every year. It probably should go towards like cancer research or something like that. But anyways, final thing I want to mention about the Vita, Killzone Beta came out today. And holy shit. Holy shit, is that game gorgeous on the Vita. And the online multiplayer is silky smooth and a ton of fun. I haven't played like Killzone Online ever. I never played any of the PS3 games online. I don't know if it was just like always kind of good, but on the Vita, it's really fast. It's 4v4 on nice, like really beautiful small maps. Like I got like a real, almost like Halo, like 2 vibe from it. Like it was really weird, and or Halo 1, I should probably say. And oh. It was it feels really good on the Vita. Like it controls really well. I had to turn up the sensitivity a little bit, but if you're a PlayStation Plus member, get in on the beta. And as soon as I played one round of that, I went directly to Amazon and pre-ordered the game. Like I was really sold on it that fast.
Yeah, that's what the Vita has needed all along. It was a really good multiplayer first-person shooter. You know, Call of Duty did not scratch that itch, and Resistance did not either. So I'm really glad to hear that Killzone's a ton of fun to play on the go like that.
Oh, it's really the sound is fantastic. Like putting on some headphones and playing multiplayer was really cool. And I, you know, their early things that are coming out is that the single player is like 12 hours long. Like that's nuts.
Yeah.
So if you want like a real game, there's one coming to the Vitas. And what the other thing that I did is like pre-ordered Ease, because I played some Ease up on the Vita at one of the stores in Japan, and that game is just it's so good.
Can I get on my soapbox for a second?
Are you going to talk shit about Ease? Okay, yeah, go ahead.
No, it's not at all about Ease. Just you were saying, you know, there's finally like a big game for the Vita, and indeed, this is an awesome thing. And you have Rayman Legends coming out next month.
Batman too. Batman, the awesome looking Batman Metroid.
Oh yeah, the Metroidvania one. Yeah, that's some of the former Metroid Prime team, by the way, who are working on that game.
Mm-hmm.
At Armature, so that's going to be really cool. But anyway, what I was going to say is that, you know, I'm a big indie loyalist, being a part of that indie scene in Lexington, Kentucky for so long, which is just like really up and coming. And the Vita has great indie support, and so it kills me sometimes to see people online at different places saying, you know, the Vita has no games. When, and Kevin, you're not guilty of this because you and I have talked about indie stuff on the Vita plenty of times, but a lot of other people will only look at like GameStop and will say, you know, there's only like 30 games here for the Vita. Yeah, but there's a lot of great indie stuff that is coming to the Vita day and date with PS4, and I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing it day and date with PC releases over time. Like, I think they're pushing for that with Hotline Miami 2. At least trying to get it out very close to the PC release on the Vita. And I'm going to talk about some other games that are coming up soon. But, you know, this distinction between indie games and box titles as if one's more valuable than the other, you know, I think that that's something that we're going to see sort of go away in the years to come. And that's a place where the Vita really shines. So I encourage you guys, if you think that the Vita doesn't have games, to take a look at all the indie stuff that's out on it. And Fez is coming out, we learned today. And that's my spiel. That's Josh's soapbox.
I got a 32 gig card and I've been having to delete stuff off it. Probably the biggest thing I was bummed about today was that there's no 64 gig memory card coming out. I don't like deleting stuff. All right, we're going to be talking some more about Vita stuff, but I want to toss it off to Trey because, and this is actually one of the things that came up on the 8-4 podcast. It was pretty kind of controversial, was the remake of DuckTales. So you got some like extensive time with it, and you even have like you have a pretty unique view on this because we just played it for an episode a month ago. So, kind of, what are your thoughts on the game?
We'll play one word here, disappointment. I think the game is beautiful looking, and the music is also great. They did a good job, you know, redoing the music, and it retains the nostalgic feeling, and it still sounds just as awesome. I'm not a fan of the gameplay. I don't know the 8-4 guys' names, you know, who was it that was mostly talking about it? on the podcast.
John had played it. Mark was more or less just saying, I've never played this before and the reviews were bad and I don't think I want to play it.
Okay. I don't know. The gameplay just felt a little off to me. The one thing that turns me off the most about it is the added cutscenes. They take too long.
Is that just the case of they had already paid these voice actors and so they were going to throw them in there every chance they got?
Yeah, for fans of DuckTales, it's awesome because they got Scrooge McDuck. I can't remember the guy's name that does his voice, but you know they got him there. And it's cool, but I would have liked an option to skip them if I don't want to watch them. I can't skip them. It's just a mixed bag. I played through it. I have not beaten it yet. I've gotten to the last level. I just kind of play it a little bit every day. But,
that's a real bummer because it's made by the people at WayForward who I really love the two games that they did on 3DS, Mighty Switch Force and Mighty Switch Force 2. I think are really great. They're also on the Wii U.
Sad.
What's up?
One of the highlights of that game for me is when you first boot it up. It plays that nostalgic Capcom sound.
Dude, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean,
when I heard that, I was like, ooh!
That's what they're playing on, though, right? They're playing on... Yeah. I mean, that's why they're remaking these games, because people loved them so much in the past. And it's like, the game's $15. It's not like relatively inexpensive game. But did you have any problems with the controls or anything like that? Because that's one of the big gripes that... people were bringing up on online and reviews.
I felt they were a little unresponsive. Okay. Especially in the Amazon level. I think somebody mentioned that on 8.4. I noticed the same thing. They just didn't feel as responsive as, you know, the NES version did. Cause you know, I just recently played it, like you said. So, I mean, I'm coming fresh off of that and going and playing the remake. I mean, I felt like something just felt off. The game ran fine. Like I said, it looked and sounded great. It's just the gameplay, the added cutscenes, they kind of take a little bit of the flair for me. If on a 1 to 10 scale, of course, I haven't beaten it yet. So, but if I had to give it a score right now, I'd probably give it like a 6.5 or 7.
So, what system are you playing it on?
PlayStation 3.
Okay, yeah, and from what I understand, the versions are all.
Oh, it's actually only out on PlayStation 3 right now and PC.
It's on Wii U, isn't it?
It's on Wii U.
I saw it advertised.
Oh, so the Xbox one is the one that's not
coming. Yeah, Xbox is getting it next month, yeah.
Because they're doing Summer of Arcade right now.
Aw, exactly. Too bad. Couldn't fit in that DuckTales, Microsoft. Man, that's weird. That's super weird.
They'll probably do a 180 and release it in a week or so.
Yeah, but they're losing tons of sales by delaying it a month. I mean, if people have... I mean, we're at the point in the console life cycle where people probably have, like, two consoles, an Xbox and something else. And if it's out on something else, they're probably just going to buy it there and not.
Yeah, well, honestly, if you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber, is that what you're going to say, Trey?
Well, no, I was going to say, honestly, like, in my, kind of summarize Microsoft, they're losing a lot right now. I don't think their focus is on DuckTales and the sales that they get from it. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to get some momentum built up from all their blunders. You know, from the announcing the system and then their E3 conference, they're in damage control mode right now on a larger scale than, you know, the like releasing and whatnot. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think right now, honestly, they've got their head shoved so far up EA's ass that they can't see anything else. So
cool. Yeah. Good for EA. I mean, that's a good place to be. How about the other thing that you've been playing, and that's another kind of big release this week, also Disney related, is Disney Infinity, which if people don't know out there is like really the, I mean, if you've looked at the last, I guess it's two years now since what's the game? Oh my God.
Skylanders
came out. Thank you. And now there's like a multitude of games that are being put together that involve figurines that you can put on special pods that will bring the figures into the game. And Disney seems like they made a pretty good version. And you're actually streaming some of it earlier today on Twitch TV. So what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are positive.
And you're a big Disney fan, right?
I am. You know, I I'm touted as a big Nintendo fanboy, and rightfully so. If there's anything I love as much as Nintendo, it's Disney. So, funny, I originally bought the game on PlayStation 3, and I was telling you this earlier, Kevin. There were some bugs on the PS3 version. They put a patch out for it on day one, and the patch broke the game. Saves were being deleted. It was freezing. It was running like garbage. So I got home with it, and I read about that on the GAF thread. So thank you, GAF, for telling me about this. And I didn't open it. I took it back and exchanged it for the Wii U version, which I should have gotten in the first place. I had a pretty big self-debate about which system I wanted to get it on, and I honestly went with PlayStation because I thought I was going to trophy it up. But I ended up getting the Wii U. First impressions, because I haven't really played a whole lot of it. I messed around in the toy box mode the first day it was out, and then I played some of the Incredibles playset today. It's a lot of fun. It's very simple. I'm assuming it gets harder. Like, I just unlocked a hub when I left off on the stream. I got the Incredibles hub, and there's like five or six quests that I can pick up now. But it's very self-explanatory. You can tell it's aimed at a big audience because they kind of guide you where you need to go if you choose. You don't have to have the guides on, but, it's there from the start. So my favorite things about it so far are the actual figures themselves. Now, I went all out for this, and I bought everything that released for it in Wave 1. So we're talking probably about $250 I invested in this game. The figures themselves are so detailed and awesome. Like, I just want to, like, I've got them on one of the shelves that I have for my cabinets, for my gaming cabinets, and I want to take them all out and have them, like, displayed so I can just look at them and be, like, in awe. Because they're just, like, compared to the Skylanders, they blow them out of the water. It's an investment. One thing that they did that I'm not a fan of is there are these things called power discs that you can get, and they basically are they're in a couple categories. You have power-ups, you've got items, and you've got like textures that you can use for like toy box mode. The way they sell them is they're in a random booster pack. So you buy a booster pack and you get two, and you don't know which ones you're going to get. So I bought a few of those, and I've gotten several duplicates. So that, I don't like the element of randomness, because I think it's kind of a cheap way to get, just easy sales for it, because, the hardcore collector like me is going to want to get them all, so I'm going to buy them until I get them all. But it's just kind of it's kind of a cash grab. And Kevin, you and I were talking about this briefly when I was doing my live stream. In the middle of the game, I found a little thing that required Mrs. Incredible to unlock. And right there in the middle of the game, you hit the button and it shows you a promotion video trying to get you to buy that figure. So that's kind of, if you're a kid and you see that, you're like, hey, mom, hey, dad, I want this now, please. $13.99. The figures are $13.99 a piece. Amazon's actually got some really good sales on it, though. They have triple packs and they're like $20. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, if you want to get into the game, the early adopters, they're kind of giving discounts too. So
Trey, what is, like, let's say that someone is going to buy one pack. Which pack should they get? What's your gut reaction to that question?
You're talking about like the individual figures?
Yeah.
Okay. To answer that, I kind of got to break it down a little bit, because when you get the starter pack, you get three figures with it. You get Mr. Incredible, you get Jack Sparrow, and then you get Sully from Monsters University, Monsters Inc., but they're promoting Monsters University. You get this other figure. It's called a playset, and basically it's got the worlds for Pirates, Incredibles, and Monsters University. So basically the game's two modes. There's playset mode, or like story mode, and then there's toy box mode. In the playset mode, you can only use figures from that particular franchise. So if I'm playing the Incredibles story mode, you have to use somebody from the Incredibles. Pirates of the Caribbean's the same way, as well as Monsters U. Toy box mode, you can use a combination of any figure you want, and it's co-op, so you can, mix it up a little bit. But, like I said, if you're looking forward to playing the Incredibles and you want to have two people playing, you need to buy one of the Incredibles characters. That being said, there's a Sidekicks pack and a Villains pack. the Sidekicks pack has Mrs. Incredible, Mike Wazowski, and Captain Barbossa. And then the Villains pack has Randall from Monsters University, Syndrome from Incredibles, and Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean. So each pack is giving you one figure from each of those, you know, starter pack franchises. I'm a fan of Syndrome from Incredibles, so out of personal bias, I would say get that one. But there's also two other playsets, so basically two other story modes you can get. There's a Cars one that gives you Lightning McQueen and whatever the purple Cars name is. I think it's from the second movie. And then there's a Lone Ranger playset, which I find very odd that they put that out first, considering how that movie bombed. But
yeah, that decision was probably made before the movie bombed.
I think so too. So you know, you've got five playsets if you decide to buy all of them. That you can, you know, each playset's 6 to 8 hours long, so you're getting a good value out of that starter set.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, to play multiplayer, you're going to have to get extra characters. There are some that are not available in triple packs. Mater, Francesco from Cars 2. And I'm trying to think if there's one other one. I don't think so. I think that's all of them. And then, of course, Toys R Us has an exclusive Lightning McQueen figure. You know, Toys R Us, they do the same thing with Skylanders. So, toy box mode. Basically, you unlock stuff throughout the play sets that you can use in toy box mode. You can create pretty much anything you want. It's got controls to make, like, racing games. It's think Little Big Planet, pretty much, in a vast scope. You can, you know, pretty much do anything your imagination wants, you know? I mean, it's, like, I know it sounds corny and everything, but that's really it. You can share the content online. It's cross-platform, so if I made something on Wii U and, Kevin, you had it on PS3, you could download what I made still. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so there's that. You know, they're talking about it being, like, a five-year thing that they're going to focus on. They've already announced the next play sets. They're going to have a Toy Story one. They're going to release the Mickey Mouse figure. I mean, they got a lot of stuff in the pipeline for it. So it's fun. It's really interactive. You know, of course, if you have kids, you're definitely going to, you know, win them over with it. But, you know, my daughter's not quite old enough yet. But when she gets older, it will be waiting on her. So
cool.
Very good.
Yeah, people, you know, want to watch some video too. Like I was talking earlier, Trey did about 30 minutes of gameplay playing through it on twitch.tv, and definitely check out his Twitch channel. It's twitch.tv/heeltreeter, and that's HEELTREETER. And I'm guessing you're going to be doing some more playthroughs and stuff like that too.
Absolutely. I'm going to keep going with it tonight, a little bit later. I'm probably about 10:30 or 11. I'll be streaming a little bit more.
Awesome.
So,
and yeah, they're cash too. That's the cool part. You can always watch them later if you can't show up for the live one.
Yeah, you know, I keep a backup on my hard drive as well. I'm going to get them all on YouTube as well.
Oh,
so,
perfect. Yeah,
I'm really going to try to go forward with this. I'm going to do that. You know, on a completely unrelated note, I'm going to start a BioShock Infinite 1999 mode run, and I'll be doing that later this week. So,
man, you love that game, dude.
Oh, yeah, I'm all about some BioShock. Yeah.
Definitely. I'm excited. The DLC looks, going back to Rapture, is pretty dope.
Yeah, that pretty much rejuvenated me to kind of go back and do that. So,
yeah.
Oh, but come on, where was he today? He was supposed to be announcing BioShock for the Vita, BioShock Side Story.
Yeah, we got Borderlands 2 though.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking. Is that, man? That sounds like a pretty good relationship with 2K.
Yeah, and where's the BioShock, right?
Yeah, and it looks like, you know, Sony's...
Even if they were just giving us, like, the first BioShock, I'd be content with that.
No, dude, I think they could do, like, if they just did something like a Minerva's Den-type side story, even if it was downloadable, I would be all for that.
Just, like, extra content in Colombia, you know?
Yeah, if Sony could get some kind of deal with 2K about that, yeah. Because, you know, one of the biggest things I heard a lot of people say about BioShock that they thought they wanted, or that they wanted to see, was some backstory or some, you know, additional stuff with Songbird. So yeah. Imagine if they got some kind of side quest that had Songbird, like, featured more prominently, and it was on Vita. Man, that would help sell that console.
And you can do some interesting stuff with the touch screen and back touch, you know, in terms of controlling Songbirds. It's, he obviously would require something better than the controls they offered you in the game for Songbird.
Well, let's talk about Gamescom, because that was obviously the big thing that happened today, is that there were three pretty big conferences: Microsoft, EA, and then finally Sony finished up the night in Europe. And really, to be real, again, it sounds like we've been hating on Microsoft, but you know, as a day one 360 owner, they're not really giving me a lot to be super pumped about. Yeah. And even their conference too, I was not as optimistic as Josh was, but I guess their big announcement was like they're bundling FIFA in every 360 in Europe because it's launching late, so they're giving people a free game. And that is like their big deal to try to like grab people, is that there's going to be exclusive content for FIFA. Like there's going to be
a really big deal over there.
Dude, there's going to be like bonus balls that you can get, like bonus colors.
They must have paid Electronic Arts a good bit of money to make EA agree to put that game in there for free. Cause that, you know, that sells like Madden sells over here. And I think even more,
but think about it. Like even if they're paying them like say 15, 20 bucks per copy, because it's going to be downloadable only. So they can't resell the game, and it's going to force people to go online. So it's kind of like a pretty good deal for Microsoft in the sense where they're going to be getting people. Like, it's like if Nintendo included a digital copy of a game, it's like, well, I mean, it's not costing them anything, but really they're just having to pay the royalties or whatever to EA to get the game, and they're going to be good to go. And let's be real, the first year of sports games, they suck. Like, it's not going to be a great game anyways. It's not going to be full featured. So they're going to get people saying, like, really interested, maybe people that never played FIFA. And then next year when the new one comes along and it's actually like up to par, then they can get their sales.
Yeah, maybe Microsoft and EA need to just get a room.
Well, and like I was talking about before, like if you look at the launch lineup games, they never really sell super, super well because there's a limited base to sell to. And on the sport game front, at least, they're usually like super shitty. Like look at Madden 06 on the 360. Look at Madden for the Wii U. Terrible. It's a really bad game. So,
Madden on the Vita. On that one.
Man, every time Madden launches on a console, it's usually shit. Except for, I remember seeing Madden 2001 on PS2 and being like, yep, I need one of those. Even though I had a Dreamcast with NFL 2K2, I thought it looked pretty good. Go ahead.
I switched my pre-order last night from Madden 25 from PS4 to PS3. One reason, I don't want to wait 2 months to play Madden. After doing the fantasy football draft Sunday, I'm in full football mode, ready to go. So I'm not waiting 2 months. And like you just said, console debut Maddens normally don't look that well or play that well or do anything well. So I'm going to kind of wait it out and see. And if anything, the value won't drop a whole lot. So I'll trade it in and get the PS4
version. Well, they're being smart. They're letting you upgrade from the current gen to the next gen version digitally for relatively cheap. It's like $10 or something.
It's $10. Yeah. It's $9.99. Yeah.
So
GameStop's doing a similar thing with only Xbox right now. But if you trade in the 360 version of the game, you can get the Xbox One version for $10.
Cool.
Smart.
That's good.
That's a good idea.
That's pretty much the big thing from Microsoft. To be honest, I knew Fable game. Okay. For
launch lineup.
Yeah. EA, the launch lineup, it's mostly stuff that we knew about.
I'm most excited for Peggle 2 of their entire launch lineup. Like, that honestly is the one game that gets like me pumped up.
Are you shitting me?
Did you see Dead Rising 3?
That looks cool.
Dead Rising 3 is one of the few things that makes me want an Xbox One. Yeah. It's not enough to sell me on it, but it's one of the few things that makes me want the system. So.
Let's talk about that. I mean, there was EA, which basically said, hey, check out all these EA sports games. Hey, check out Battlefield 4 again. Hey, Plants vs. Zombies, Plants vs. Zombies 2 sold 8 zillion copies yesterday. And then we had Sony, which brought, you know, the heavy hitters. First off, they actually did start with talking about the PlayStation Vita, something that they didn't talk about at all at E3. They basically said PlayStation Vita, yeah, it's got these indie games. Hey, PlayStation 4, let's talk about that. So on the conference today, they first off announced, as we mentioned before, Borderlands 2 is going to be coming to the PlayStation Vita. There's also going to be, and they didn't even really say this directly, but there's a ton of games that are going to be launching on the PlayStation Vita, PlayStation 3, and PlayStation 4 simultaneously, including a ton of awesome indie games, and like indie games that aren't like, you know, like shitty iPhone games. Like these are
Rogue Legacy is
like,
one of them.
Yeah, like Rogue Legacy, talking about Hotline Miami 2. Like these are
Minecraft.
Minecraft is going to be
for crying out loud. Is that going to be on Vita?
Yeah,
it's PS4 and launch. They did not give a release date for PS3 and Vita. It may be launch. It may be the same time. But the only thing they said was coming out at launch was the PS4 version. But
that's still
what's it? Notch confirmed that it was going to be PS3 and PS Vita as well.
If they can get it out for Christmas, that would be good.
Yeah, if the PS Vita version is the same version that you get on PS3 and Xbox 360. Holy shit.
And that, you know, like, think about it, the ability, if you can, like, kind of, like, cross-play between the two, and it's, like...
Oh, my God.
And that's like, the other thing.
That's the type of game that it wouldn't be hard to do.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that Sony does so well, and it's why we, like, as kind of hardcore gamers are liking them so much, is when you... There's so many opportunities there for cross-buy, where you can buy, like, Hotline Miami, I bought on the Vita, but I can also... I automatically get the PS3 version along with that as well. Divekick, games like
Guacamelee is a good example of one where you might actually share the saves between both versions,
and it's super easy to do that. It's with the content manager, it's literally two button presses, or you can do it through PlayStation Plus, right. Through uploading through the cloud on PlayStation Plus, and you know, just the flexibility that gives you and the incredible value. Like that, I mean, you're literally basically getting two games for the price of one. It's like, imagine what people would do if you could buy Super Mario Brothers and get it on your Wii, your Wii U, your 3DS, all for $4 or $5.
Wishful thinking.
God. No, it's not it's not even worth thinking about because it will never happen.
You're exactly right. And
It's just kind of shows funny. Where the different companies are at in terms of their mindset. Oh, yeah. Totally. So that is awesome, and again, it's like the Vita has some really heavy hitters coming this year with Killzone. They also have Tearaway. They also have Ease. They also have Batman. They have, you know, pretty big retail releases, Borderlands 2. And then they have that huge slew of fantastic indie games. And I'm looking at the rest of the year for Vita versus 3DS, and I might be in the minority, but I'm thinking the Vita looks a lot better. Like really the big thing that I want to play on the 3DS is the new Zelda, and that's really about it. I mean,
no, it's not the greatest Christmas lineup or holiday lineup ever.
Even just
3DS.
Look at Mario and Luigi, whatever. It's getting like kind of really mediocre reviews, just kind of like what Sticker Star got, mediocre reviews. Like, I don't know
what you say is getting mediocre reviews.
Mario and Luigi, that game's awesome.
No, it's, well, I'm saying it's getting less than stellar reviews.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Wonderful 101.
Yeah, that
I
is too.
What I want to hear.
Well, I mean, that's, I think that's not going to sell Wii U's anyways. It doesn't matter. But yeah. I think.
Those reviews are bothering me, though. They're not fair. But I won't even go there right now. That's another soapbox for another day.
I hope to play. Like, the other thing that's kind of coming out is rumors that there's a possible. This is on Nintendo side of things. Well, actually, let's finish up with Sony first. So, two last big things that Josh wanted to mention. Twitch was announced for PlayStation 4. So it's not just Ustream. It's also Twitch. So you can stream right from your PS4 onto your Twitch station, which, let's be real, is kind of a better service and is a little bit more flexible. And that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I think that was actually Trey who wanted to talk about that.
Oh, sorry.
I haven't really gotten in on the Twitch thing yet.
Yeah, booyah, that's freaking awesome. They hit the share button and boom, to Twitch it goes. The only thing I'm curious about is if they're going to find a way to integrate the microphone so you can do commentary while you're using Twitch as well.
Well, hopefully there'll be like a USB mic setup too, because to be honest, going through the headset on a controller is not usually the best way to do it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I just hope there's some kind of, option.
Well, think
commentary, because that's going to be a popular thing.
You got to think they can do it, though, because there's also, the PlayStation Eye, too. So maybe you can even do, like, a webcam set up in a corner. It'll be really cool to see that.
About that.
Well, I mean, it's basically, as long as they can put some kind of XSplit-type piece of software on the PS4 to run at the same time, which they should. They got 3 gigs of RAM to run stuff in the background. It should totally be doable. And finally, we got a launch date for the PlayStation 4 in North America and Europe. We got November 15th, which is basically the same exact launch as everything always the last couple of generations. So,
right before Black Friday.
Yeah, the week before Thanksgiving. And it is I'm happy. I still got I've been talking on the podcast like, man, I think I might not keep my PlayStation 4 pre-order. But Kevin... Hold on. Kevin from 3 months ago, fuck you. Of course you're going to keep that PlayStation 4 pre-order. After what I saw like today and again, the integration with the Vita and stuff, like why would you – I mean it's only $450 to get the – I got the Watch Dogs bundle. Day one launch, I'm getting it. It's done totally.
Are we all getting PS4s on launch day? Because I decided I'm going to keep mine as well.
I went to GameStop the day after the conference, and when I did that big trade with the 360, I paid off the system in 6 games, so I'm good to go.
Whoa! Okay, what 6 games are you getting on this thing? 6 launch games?
Well, they weren't all launch games. I paid off Madden, I paid off Battlefield 4, Watch Dogs, Assassin's Creed 4, Infamous Second Son, and what was the 6th one? You know what? Killzone? I don't think the 6th game. Yeah, Killzone. There you go. Yeah, those are the 6 games I have.
Man, that's a pretty good. I mean, I think even Xbox has a really good launch lineup too. They both are really. I mean, compare this to PlayStation 3 and Xbox. I mean, to be honest, I think Xbox 360 had a pretty good launch lineup. You had Call of Duty 2.
Yeah.
Perfect Dark Zero wasn't great, but it was like, it had that awesome club music in it.
Project Gotham.
Oh, Project Gotham 3, which. Like, I had never played a racing game like that before, but it came, like, when we were forced to get those bundles. Like, I got, like, a $500 bundle. Thank God my parents paid for that son of a, like, that stupid goddamn bundle. But they paid for it, and I played Project Gotham and fell in love with that game. It just looks so good. And even Elder Scrolls came, like, 3 weeks after launch or something like that. It came in January.
I'm not going to let Josh's... game title go unnoticed. That was the sleeper of the launch, Condemned Criminal Origins.
Oh, hell yeah.
It was freaking awesome.
Oh my God. That scared the crap out of me.
The mannequins.
Yeah. Mannequins moving around you. Mannequins. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was just we'll a weird title that. At launch. You know, you don't normally get a horror game or survival horror, whatever you want to call it, at launch like that. That was really cool.
Man,
that was an awesome game.
Thank you, Sega, for funding that thing. To be honest, I might be in the minority. I think Condemned 2 was pretty damn good too. That I shot a preview video. Like I did a preview of that to get into game trailers for my internship. And thank God I have my mom's camcorder to do that.
That's awesome. I'd really like to see that actually.
Man,
little known fact: Kevin actually hired Jeff Keighley at Game Trailers.
Oh, I got a Jeff Keighley story. I got a Jeff Keighley story. I can't really tell it on the air, but
yeah,
man,
that.
Yeah, that's he seems like an interesting dude.
Does it involve humiliating him?
Oh no! I mean, it was kind of. I'm not gonna talk about it. So,
Okay.
All right, let's finish off and talk about. Did I mention the Vita, the blue Vita is like super, super hot? Like when that blue LED is glowing on the PS logo.
Hey, we've said a lot of positive things about Sony today, so we're going to bring them back down a little bit. As hot as those blue and red Vitas are, the blue and red controllers for the PS4 are not hot.
What?
They are the exact opposite. They look like 3DS XLs. They have the Fisher-Price color scheme going.
You got to see it in person, man.
Does it look good in person? Oh, no, not the Vita, but the PS4 controller.
No, that's what I'm saying. Wait till you, like, see a video of it. I saw those pictures, too, and again, well, the problem is it can't be glossy because then it would look all, like, fingerprinty and stuff. It has to be matte, and it's, I don't know.
It's the blue, then black. If it was just blue, you know, and Nintendo's really into doing that as well. I don't know.
I gotta see these things. Hold on. I haven't seen them yet.
Gaff thread is very funny, some of the GIFs that are being posted in response to
Oh, before we stop talking about Sony, how about the burn that they got on Microsoft today?
Yeah, that they, you know, some people out there are changing their story.
And yeah, like, we're consistent on ours. Yeah, that was good. A very nice subtle hint. And no, then,
good. They earned it. Like they took a huge
YouTube
risk.
Video,
so.
You remember the YouTube video where they explained their trading, their loaning system or loaning games out to friends, where the guy just handed the game to the other guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That same guy, he tweeted. He also took a stab.
Oh, Shuhei Yoshida.
Mention, yeah, he made a mention about how many countries PS4 was being launched in at launch compared to Microsoft. So.
33.
Yeah,
compared to like 13. So, yeah, and a funny story. I was at the, going to the airport. You take a shuttle to kind of get to the international terminal. I'm like, man, this is like kind of lining up to Gamescom. Maybe I'm gonna. I mean, who knows? You know, maybe I'll run into someone. And then I hear three guys in suits talking about PlayStation. Like they're speaking in Japanese, but like I'm no PlayStation. And so I'm like, I look behind, I'm like. Man, if I turn around and it's Shuhei Yoshida, I'm gonna flip out because that guy is super cool and he's like actually one of those really cool industry guys that like will reply to your tweets and stuff like that. Like we had a conversation when I was out in Japan in March. I bought Soul Sacrifice, the Japanese version for the Vita, and tweeted like, "Man, Shuhei Yoshida, you gotta get this thing to America. This game is awesome." He's like, "That's what's up." That's right, and then he retweeted it, and I was like,
"That's awesome,
man!" That
was
like meeting
a small thing to do, too, you know. But it really says a lot about caring about your customers on some level.
I think anyone, if you go on Twitter and you want people to give a crap about what you're going to talk about, and you don't reply to them when you like, unless you're like one of those people that have over 10,000 people following you. I think you kind of owe it to people who give a crap about what you have to say to like answer their questions from time to time. And it takes like 140 characters. It's not a lot. All right. So this was a really weird episode. It's not one of our normal shows, but we're going to be coming back with the regular style next week with the regular segments where we're going to be hitting on the Neo Geo 3 slot. A play off the 2 and 4 and 1 slot PCBs for the arcades. And we're going to be talking about three heavy hitters. And we might even throw in a bonus because it is related. I would love if you guys are down to talk about Metal Slug XX for the PSP.
It's never hard to get me to play Metal Slug. Metal Slug anything, man. Those games are so rad.
Yeah, and I think...
I actually saw that was free like a week ago and downloaded it and played it and really enjoyed it. Oh my God. Yeah, I'd be down to talk about that for sure.
It was one of the weirdest things. I got, again, it's a 14-hour flight to go to Japan. And on the flight, I'm usually not always comfortable enough to play video games. But I started playing that and then I just like realized 40 minutes later I played through the whole game. Or an hour later. I like literally just sat there and play right through it because they're cool about giving you like unlimited continues. So, yeah, that's that. I really appreciate the audience for bearing with these kind of different episodes because of the travel and stuff like that and jet lag. I really didn't have the juice to do a regular show and prep time and stuff like that. So this is our way of getting something out there for you. Like I said, we're going to be back next week with the Neo Geo podcast. After that, or at least three Neo Geo games. I'm sure we're going to be doing another one. And then after that, we're going to be doing a game. I'm thinking N64 games. I'm thinking we go back-to-back N64 games. One is absolutely going to be WrestleMania 2000. Lock it in.
What? Yes.
That's going
to
be...
There's somebody sitting right next to me now that will be tuning in for that podcast. We're both wrestling fans.
Your dogs?
No,
because I know you.
Russell. My dogs are little Daniel Bryan fans. Okay, you know they're down. Now one of my buddies is over here.
All right, hold on. I know this is not really this is relevant, but how do you perform a goddamn finisher in that? Because I have the Japanese version of WrestleMania 2000, and like I thought it was like you flick the control stick once
That's what I thought it was too. That's what it was.
It doesn't work.
Tour and revenge. It doesn't work, huh? How about A and B at the same time?
I'll try that because like I'm like, man, where's what? Fucking Stone Cold Stunner. Stone Cold Stunner. Stone Cold Stunner. Come on.
Stone Cold.
I don't know what's happening right now.
Oh, you're in for a treat when we do that podcast.
I can't wait.
Oh, man.
I'll be like the moderator. I'll be the referee.
Actually, you know what we might have to do is just all entrance music for that podcast. But
it's got to be
oh, like the crappy movie. Compressed and like they don't even show the whole. Or maybe what we'll do is maybe we can do, oh, you know what would be great if they had the SmackDown games on for PS1 on the PSN.
I own them.
Yeah, but I don't want to track that down.
Cheap as hell.
I know, but we'll do double N64 podcast just because we've kind of neglected that console. And then we will probably go back to some older stuff, but we're going to be – that's like 96, 98. So let's do we'll do that, and then we'll do – I say how about
– Wave Race.
We'll do Wave Race 64. So those are the two games for the awesome next episode after Neo Geo. So so stick around for that. Please subscribe on iTunes. I have an awesome giveaway. This is going to be the biggest giveaway we've ever had, and it is a Wii U faceplate that is Famicom themed that you can only get in Japan, and it is like really hard to find. Like I was really lucky to find one, and it is super rare. So if you want to get in on that, to enter the contest, you're going to have to throw up a review on iTunes. So make sure you do that. So when we do the contest next week, you're good to go. For our people that won the Final Fight and Zombies Ate My Neighbor's carts, those are going out tomorrow. So those will be getting to you probably by the end of the week. And other than that, thank you so much. Go to the website and check out the video of the Frame Meister. You can follow myself on twitter.com/KevinLarrabee. You can follow Trey at twitter.com/HeelTrader. Again, that's HEELTREETER. And you can follow Josh on Twitter at twitter.com/Joshua Hillier.
And I just want to add that I'm actually going through the alphabet right now on Twitter.
Yeah, why are you doing that?
You definitely want to follow me.
Why are you doing that?
It started by mistake. My phone was in my pocket and I hadn't turned the screen off, and it typed the letter A and tweeted it somehow. And a few people favorited it and like retweeted it. And so I'm just going through the whole alphabet.
Cool. And if you want to play some Killzone, whatever it's, I don't know what, I forget what it's called, Killzone whatever on the Vita, Killzone Vita, you can add me, Kevin Larrabee, on PlayStation Network.
I would do that right now.
Yeah, we should totally do.
That's happening. That is so happening. You got me pumped about this.
Dude, what
10 minutes to go.
Dude, what we'll do is like a side note. I would love to do some game nights where we can like boot up like some older games and play some multiplayer with the audience too. All right, so that's it. Go pick up a Frame Meister. Go check out the A4 Play podcast. Submit a review on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter. Buy a PlayStation Vita. Pick up WrestleMania 2000 on the N64. Pick up
Stone Cold
is coming in. Oh, it's out front of a beer truck. Oh, it's spraying Vince McMahon with beer. See you next week.
Peace.
Stone Cold.
Somebody just ran over Stone Cold.
I thought I knew that son of a bitch. Oh,
it was me all along.
Yeah, it was me, Austin.
It was me, Austin, you son of a...
WrestleMania 2000. Woo!